distance in the light.
Hello, loved ones. This is Matt Stevens, and this is the My Sober Addiction Podcast. I have once again been gone for a while. I've actually recorded, this is the third time that I have recorded this episode. I have been doing a episode for the Colburn Bible. It's a version of the Bible that most of us have never heard of, and there's a lot of very interesting things in there. I've been working on doing an episode about that. I've already recorded two, but they really just weren't good enough. They weren't, I guess I realized I needed to do a little more research into it, but there's a lot of really good stuff in there, so I've definitely got to get it done. Anyway, so that's what's been going on. I've actually recorded two episodes, and I'm actually two behind right now, oddly enough. And also, well, there's a lot of things going on. If you wouldn't mind, loved ones, please keep Kitty in your thoughts and prayers. She is dealing with some family issues. There's a very dear loved one that's probably not going to be with us much longer. And they're just kind of, her and her siblings are just kind of dealing with that. I'm trying to be there for her and for that. They're a great bunch of people. They really are. So I'm just trying to be there for them best I can. So there's that. So the mantra is, as I've been saying, we are happy, healthy, wealthy, and free. And everything is working in our favor because we are very victorious already just by virtue of beating addiction, just by virtue of being where we are right now, just by virtue of sitting here having these discussions, thinking about life. We've really come so far. And some of these verses that I've read in the Colburn Bible have kind of pointed that out to me. And I'm going to get into that real quick. Like I said, there's some amazing things in there. And let me pull that up real quick. There's my notes. So, in the Colburn Bible, the first book is called the Book of Creation. Well, that makes sense. And verse 1 and 2, it says, "There are no true beginnings on earth, for here all is effect. The ultimate cause being elsewhere." Now that kind of goes along with what we've been talking about here with the whole, we are driving these avatars, this body that we have is not really who we are. Who we really are is, we'll just say, out there. And in order to be here in this reality, this construct, if you will, we must inhabit some kind of apparatus that will allow us to maneuver around and communicate and just inhabit and live in this environment. I believe that we are spiritual beings. We are souls that are eternal. We are immortal, if you will. But we've got a lot to learn. And plus, it's probably pretty boring, right? So anyway, the Colburn Bible, that was verse 1. It goes on with verse 2. It says, "God laid his hand upon man, saying, now, you are even as I, except you sleep there enclosed in matter, in the kingdom of illusion, while I dwell here in the freedom of reality. In truth, it is not for me to come down to you, but for you to reach me." That is pretty profound. In fact, that's extremely profound. I'm going to read those again. A little quicker this time, of course. "There are no true beginnings on earth, for here is all effect. The ultimate cause being elsewhere. God laid his hand upon man, saying, now, you are even as I." We're just like God. We are even as him. "You are even as I, except you sleep there enclosed in matter, in the kingdom of illusion, while I dwell here in the freedom of reality." So we are in the kingdom of illusion. God is in the freedom of reality. It says, "In truth, it is not for me to come down to you." I'm not coming down to the kingdom of illusion. It is for you to reach me, for us to come to where he is in the freedom of reality. So we're here for a reason. And we're going back to where we came from. But what are we here for? Well, before you think this is some New Age Bible, some New Age whatever thing, the Colbert Bible makes no mention of what we in the West would refer to as the Bible. The Bible in the West is what you would call the Judeo-Christian Bible. It makes no mention of any of those ancient Jewish and or Christian texts, which would indicate that it is older. It indicates that the Colbert Bible is older than in the West would call the Bible. And it is also evidence of it becoming an independent writing. Thank you, Jason Brashears of Archaics, for pointing that out. Now I'm going to skip over to what we in the West would call the Bible, the Judeo-Christian Bible. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, it says, "And God blessed them, and God said unto them, Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it." Now most preachers you hear will refer to whenever it says to be fruitful and multiply, and also they like to point out where it says and to subdue it, meaning you have dominion over the earth and to control the earth and yada yada, all that. One thing that they kind of just gloss over is the word replenish. The word replenish, by definition, means to fill something up again, to restore a stock or a supply to former level, to make full or complete again. Which would lead us to believe that this creation, this earth, this time around, ain't the first time. That leads you to believe this construct that we have found ourselves living in has been stocked before. It wasn't just created. And this says so right there in your Bible. Go pull your Bible off the shelf and dust it off and read it for yourself. This implies that it was not created right then in that point. It says, replenish the earth. Am I mincing words? Well, am I? So, we have been instructed to be creators. We have been instructed to be manifestors. We have been instructed to do these things. It's like, well, but we don't know how. Well, and therein lies the issue. That's when it gets into why I think we're here. We're here to learn how to create. We're here to learn how to manifest. God said, you are even as I. Or in the Judeo-Christian Bible, in Psalm 82, verse 6, it said, I have said, ye, meaning you, are gods. Or you can go on, here Christians, in John chapter 10, verse 34, Jesus answered them. He was referring to Psalm 82, verse 6. Jesus answered them, is it not written in your law, I said, ye are gods. And then he continues, 35, if he called them gods, then to whom the word of God came, and the scripture cannot be broken. So Jesus is even pointing out to them, didn't it say even in your own laws, God said you are gods? Now, does that mean we are like God? Yes, it does. You thought I was going to say no, didn't you? I believe that we were sent here to be creators. I believe that we were sent here to learn how to manifest. Just like God did, just like Jesus said, all these things I do, you will do, and more. I'm not making this up. So anybody who wants to call me a blasphemer, go for it. Anywho, back to the Colbert Bible, Book of Creation, chapter 4, verse 16. This is when I'm getting to you and our addictions. The earth is not for the pleasure of man, but it is a place of instruction for his soul. A man more readily feels the stirrings of his spirit in the face of disaster than in the lap of luxury. The tuition of the soul is a long and arduous course of instruction and training. It says, we are here to learn something, obviously. It's not for the pleasure of man, but it is a place of instruction for his soul. Some people would say, we agreed to all this prior to incarnating here this time. Some people say that we plan out our lives before we even come here. Some people say that every little detail is planned. We pick our parents, we pick our families, we pick our this and that and everything else. I tend to think of it more like a choose your own adventure book. Now, anybody who, and they may still make these books, I don't know. But back in the 80s, we had these choose your own adventure books, and they were really cool because you could start a reading, you could start reading it, and it would go on this little thing, and then you would be posed with this question: do you want to go left or do you want to go right or whatever? And depending upon what you chose, the book would then turn, and it would say, you know, turn to page 65 for that, or turn to page 81 for that, or whatever. And then it would continue. And these books were laid out pretty slick, actually. But of course, I was also in grade school at the time, too, so bear with me. I just remember they were really cool. And you may finish the book and complete the adventure, or you may die. And at which point in time you go back to where you were first time and pick the other route because, well, everybody wants to win, right? So I look at this reality here as more of a choose your own adventure book. But when it comes to addiction, there are so many valuable lessons to be learned that it almost seems like it was predestined. Almost like this lifetime is a crash course in something. It's sort of hitting the gas pedal on our learning to speed things up. And maybe we've done this thing so many times, it's like, okay, dude, you have really got to make this your last incarnation. You really got to figure some shit out. So you're going to go be a heroin addict, and things are going to be real bad for a long time, and hopefully you'll survive it and learn some very valuable lessons. And yeah, there you go. It's kind of funny, maybe, but it also may be not completely untrue. Hang on, my coffee. I can't let my coffee get cold here. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Okay. So from the 30,000 foot view, as long as everything ends well, it can be seen as a very rapid learning experience. I'm really trying hard to avoid saying it's a good thing, because I don't want to trigger somebody's anger or whatever. I don't want to ever say addiction was a good thing. But we did learn some extremely valuable lessons from it, right? Like, for example, what did we learn from addiction? What does it teach us and how? Well, in my opinion, it taught us about reality creation. How fast we can become something. How fast we can become an addict strung out on the street, hustling for dope every day, crashing on people, random people's couches, just the whole thing, right? Going through withdrawals, going to jail, getting out, doing it all again, right? It's insane. But we did it, and we did it repeatedly, and we kept doing it. And if we really look back on it, we think, wow, that taught me I do create my life. The life I created with that, though, was phew. But the good news is you did create something. That's the cool thing that you did learn. Just what you created sucked. What I created certainly sucked. I can remember laying over on my side in the holding tank at the jail, waiting to get processed. And I was so dope sick. I was so weak. I could not even raise up. I literally had my head laid over on this bench with vomit streaming down the side of it because I was too weak to raise my head to do anything else with it. Yeah. So reality creation, we've learned a lot about reality creation in the wrong way, of course, but we do turn ourselves into that. And yeah, in most cases, it starts out innocently enough. I've always told people, look, I never intended I never set out to be an addict. I never set out to be a junkie. But it certainly did happen. I certainly went down that path. But I also realized, you know, life patterns. Because if anything, when we're in addiction, if we don't learn anything, we definitely learn about life patterns. We definitely learn about, well, patterning from the rituals of addiction. And everybody knows that it's addiction is very ritualistic, right down to the way people will use, right? When you first get your drugs, you got your whole little setup. I mean, I know a lot of people who kind of spread their gear out in front of them and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sorry if I'm kind of bringing back some memories for people in this, you know, I'm not trying to trigger anybody, but it's such a ritual the way we would do it. And that downward spiral, it is a pattern, a spiral. If anything is a pattern, it is a spiral, correct? And that downward spiral, it just keeps going and going and going. And, you know, I put in my memoir that is forthcoming that it kind of spirals downward until it becomes just a pinpoint and it just keeps churning. And I guess that's one of you're one of the lucky ones that actually lives through it, right? And I guess the biggest thing is it teaches us to break patterns, because nothing changes if nothing changes, correct? Keep doing the same thing, keep getting the same thing. But one of the things that we definitely learn is we have to break pattern. We have to stop doing the same things every single day. And addiction really gets a hold of us and causes us to do those things. Because there's times where you may decide, today's my big day. I'm not going to use today. I am not going to do it. I'm going to go through this and check myself into a detox facility tomorrow morning. But I got to get in withdrawal first or whatever. While you're saying all those things to yourself, what are you doing? You're making the arrangements. You're hustling up some money. You're this, you're that. You're calling your dope man, texting your dope man, whatever. You're making it, you're moving and shaking and making it happen. Next thing you know, you got dope in your hand and you're doing it. And you are on autopilot, right? You just did that. And it's like, and you almost come to, you kind of snap out of it and think, what in the hell? How did this happen? So we learn a lot of things from addiction. Breaking patterns, to me, is probably the biggest one. We have to learn how to break patterns so that new things will start happening for us. It's no big secret that I have just about become fully on board with simulation theory. Although, I'm going to say this. I got to say this. Since I'm pretty much just admitted that I'm fully a simulation theorist, I do believe we are in some sort of construct. Not unlike a simulation, but it's all for a purpose. I do not believe we are in a computer somewhere in some nerd's bedroom or in some cave buried in the side of a mountain somewhere where people are running some computer program and here we are. I'm not completely opposed to that idea either, because if that were the case, then that means that we are probably living out these entire lifetimes in a matter of hours. Could be just a day at the office. This whole lifetime could be your job. This could be a day at work for you. I don't necessarily believe that, because that would kind of cheapen the whole experience, in my opinion. Arthur C. Clarke said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. You see, in this reality, in this very material world that we live in, we can't imagine even referring to something as spiritual or mental as being a technology. To us, technology includes circuit boards and wires and gadgets, computers and such. But that's just our very limited thinking. Technology can be spiritual. Technology can be mental. It doesn't have to be confined to machinery or gadgets. But yeah, that Arthur C. Clarke quote is pretty good. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So anyway, getting back to the lessons that we have learned in this lifetime, as an addict, I feel like we have been on a crash course. I think maybe that means we've been here too many times and it's time to freaking get your shit together and get out. So I say, hey, let us make this our last time here. Let's finally learn whatever it is we've came to learn. And I believe we have come here to learn to be master manifestors. And if you're a Christian or if you're whatever, I can back that up with your own Bible. I already did, in fact. Psalm 82, verse 6, right? John 10:34, go look them up for yourself. Genesis 1:28 kind of proves that this is not the first go around here. This ain't the first time this construct, this planet, this whatever, this reality has been inhabited. So we've learned manifestation. We've manifested really crappy lives for ourselves. A lot of the spiritual teachers, people who teach these kind of things, they'll tell you, you're manifesting all the time. All the time. Whether you realize it or not, whether you like what you're manifesting or not. Because most people hear the word manifesting, reality or whatever, and they think they are going to be manifesting their dream life. And that's kind of what we want to do, right? But we have to become aware of the fact that that's what we're doing. That's when you have to become aware of your own awareness, meaning I am a conscious being. I am that I am. And I am now aware of that fact. If you really let that sink in, really let that sink in. Listen to your own voice. Listen to your thoughts. Step outside of yourself. Take the 30,000 foot view for a minute and look down on yourself. That's really kind of how it is. Think about it from the video game perspective. When you're looking down on an avatar in Call of Duty or whatever, World of Warcraft, any of those. When you look down on that avatar that you're playing, imagine that avatar one day becomes advanced enough and thinks, holy, I exist. That's kind of the same thing. That's you realizing that you are a true individual soul. And yes, you've created crappy manifestations for yourself, for your life. Look around. Everything around you right now, you've manifested, myself included, everybody. The good thing is that what does that teach us? We can keep doing it. We can keep doing it. And now that we're aware of that, yeah, that's when it gets really good. Because now we know what's been going on. Now we know we do create. We do manifest. So maybe life up to this point hasn't been great. Maybe it's been okay. I don't know. My guess is if you've made it to listening to this podcast, it's probably been really, really bad, and it's probably getting better. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. I'm guessing you probably have gotten out of active addiction, or you're about to. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this. Maybe, but probably not. And another great thing that we have learned is our relationship with the Creator. You know, when we go to these, and I'm not a big fan, obviously, of AA or NA or whatever, but there are some things that they do that I think are amazing, such as admitting that we are completely out of control and need help. That teaches us to trust in the Creator, trust in God, the universe, whatever you want to call it. So we admit I'm out of control and I need help. And until we do that, we're on our own. And we're not very good at it. We program ourselves to believe that we must wait for those good things to happen. We program ourselves to believe that, well, I've got to get sober, but God, that's going to take this and it's going to take that, whatever. Well, as soon as you say that, that's exactly how it's going to be. And then I know some people are like, well, we got to be realistic, Matt. You know, that's just how it is. That's how it really is. That's how it really does go. Well, that is true if you're doing it on your own. But if you surrender it to your Creator, if you surrender it to your higher power, you let go of that programming. Let go of thinking that we must wait for those good things. We let go of the thinking that we've got to wait it out. And I know people are like, well, it does take a week or so to detox from heroin. Okay, that's fine. That's not that a week. That ain't shit. You can do that. Does it suck? Yes, absolutely does. I've done it more times. Oh, it's not good. But if you program yourself and you believe that these things take time and we got to wait, the construct that we have found ourselves in right now, we'll make sure that happens. And here's what's kind of funny. You know, I've been writing this memoir, and I got really deep into a part where I was writing about going through a withdrawal. Okay. I got really deep into it, and it hit me. I was feeling those symptoms. Now, please bear in mind, I'm coming up on my 7-year anniversary for being sober. That date is rapidly approaching to the point where I can almost go ahead and tell you it's been 7 years. I thought I'd all but forgotten really how it felt. I mean, I know what the symptoms are, but to physically feel them. So I was writing, and I was writing a part about the withdrawals. And I got really into it as far as the details. And then I kind of set my book, my notebook down, and I'm looking, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I feel it. I felt the weakness in my legs. I felt the cramping in my stomach. It wasn't serious. I mean, it wasn't that heavy. It was just enough. Very, very mild and very, very brief. And no, it didn't make me want to relapse. In fact, it did the opposite. It reminded me what I never want to feel again. But the good thing about that is what it made me realize, though. I realized, wow, this memoir, because I really, if anything, I really want this thing to be genuine. This memoir, if I publish it or whatever I do with it, it must be authentic. Because one thing I know about you addicts, we don't accept no bullshit. And you can't just wing it. You can't fake it and expect addicts to go along with you. But now if you are authentic and you are real, addicts will support you. And I felt after I realized, after I got over that little feeling of withdrawal, and I'm telling you, that was wild. That was very wild. I hadn't felt that feeling in almost 7 years. I got a little excited because I'm like, wow, this memoir is going to be very authentic. I'm not just writing from memory at this point, because I'm writing in the moment. I'm writing in the feeling. I'm writing with those actual withdrawal symptom feelings on me. And the weakness in the legs, the cramp in the stomach, that thick, snotty feeling in the back of your throat and in your sinuses. Yeah. It only lasted a couple of minutes. It was very mild. Just enough to kind of tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, bud, you remember me? Oh, yeah, I remember you all right. Oh, yes. We are not friends. So anybody who thinks, oh, God, Matt, you know, he's in a withdrawal. He's going to go out and relapse. No. If anything, that strengthened my resolve to stay sober, because I never want to go through. I can't go through that again. Last time I was in detox, I almost had a stroke or whatever. I don't know. My blood pressure got to like 220 over 150, something insane. It was really high. They sent me to the ER. They said the worst part was my pulse was really low. They said it didn't make any sense. They were like, your blood pressure is that high, but your pulse is like 30 or something like that. It was crazy. They said it doesn't make any sense. That it's alarming to us. We got to get you, you know, to an ER. You know, withdrawal from heroin can't directly kill you. Like alcohol and benzos can directly kill you. It can cause you to have a seizure and you die. Withdrawal from opioids cannot directly. Now, it could cause your blood pressure to spike like that from going through the withdrawal and cause you to have an aneurysm or a stroke. Sure. Anyway, so I'm going to wrap things up. But one of the other things we've learned from this incarnation, this time, this particular reality, I believe, with regards to addiction, is it caused us to have to trust God. It gave us no choice. Your higher power, God, I tend to call it the creator. Kitty calls it the universe. Most people say God, so I try to stick with that. But it's whatever. It's fine. It's the all. It's the source. Actually, I think it's really cool to call God the all or source. Because it is the source of everything. But we have no choice but to surrender to God and to surrender and say, I can't do this. I need help. And step in the right direction. Go check yourself into rehab, whatever, right? And turn it over. And the beautiful thing about that is, even after we get sober, we take that lesson from getting sober into the rest of our lives. In that, we say, this is what I need to do with my life. I want to create an amazing life. I want to get married and have 100 kids and not me. I promise you that. Getting married. Oh yes. The lovely kitty. You don't let a woman like that go, buddy. Oh no. Lock her down. Anywho. Okay. So she's going to love that. All right. So anyway, God, I lost my train of thought. It teaches us to turn it over to higher power. It teaches us to define what it is that we want for our lives. Turn it over to God. Make a step in the right direction. You don't even have to meet God halfway, man. You just got to make a step If that goal is to get sober and say, I'm turning it over to you. This is going to suck, but I'm going to trust you to make this happen and go check yourself into rehab. That's it. You just did your part. If you want to start a business, I usually use the example of being a lawnmower, you know, mowing lawns. Don't ask me why. I don't know. Hey, those guys make a lot of freaking money. The guys who do like landscaping and lawn care and stuff. Make a step in the right direction. Make an investment. Buy a lawnmower. Go start knocking on some doors. Trust your higher power to take care of the rest. You're going to be amazed. You will be. That's it. That's all I got. Case closed. Make a step and trust your higher power. And I believe that is what we have come here in this lifetime to learn. And I believe that all of us addicts were probably freaking knuckleheads and had a hard time learning that lesson. And it's like, fine, you want to play hardball? We'll play hardball. You're going to go be a freaking addict and you're going to be forced to come back to me for help. I don't know. Again, I believe that that is all something that we have manifested in our own lives. But from the 30,000 foot view, your real self, your soul, your true self that's on the outside looking in, if you think about it, would be willing to put your avatar through addiction. It's like, I got to put this guy through this so that I can learn these things. I got to, you know, maybe that's contradictory. You get my point. You get what I'm saying. As bad as addiction was, if we learn those lessons from it, then it was worth it. And that may be controversial. Somebody might think, oh my God, I can't believe you said addiction was worth it. If that is, yeah, I'm going to say it. If we learn those lessons and we're able to be, I'm going to throw this on there just for good measure, and we're able to be those shining examples to other addicts to show them that they can do it too. Although I will maintain we are not here to save the world, but we can inspire each other. Because really, I've got a little joke I got with some of my close friends, and actually it's not that, it hasn't been received as badly as I thought it would be. You know, sometimes I joke about, like, environmentalism. It's like, don't worry about it. None of this is real anyway. And some people, I would think that some people would be like, oh my God, I can't believe he said that. We don't have to take care of the environment because none of this is real anyway. I never said that, first of all. Don't pollute. Don't pollute. However, we're not going to save the world. We're just not. Besides, there's nothing here to save. None of this is real anyway. Sue me. Anyway, loved ones, that's what I got for this time around. Like I said, this was my third time recording this episode. And geez, it has been... Well, I took some stuff out. And I'm gonna continue it, I think, at a later date. But that Colburn Bible, it's very interesting. If you want to look it up for yourself, there's two ways to spell it. It's K-O-L-B-R-I-N. And I think the other way would be K-H-O-L-B-R-I-N. But there are some very interesting little nuggets in there. And the cool thing about it, like I said, is that it does not mention the Judeo-Christian Bible, which would indicate that it predates it. Just saying. There you go. So, loved ones, I will return. I know that I've been talking about how I'm trying to get back on a regular schedule. In my defense, I have been recording episodes. This one here, I was really struggling with because I've been trying to glean some knowledge, glean some stuff from the Colburn Bible to share with you, loved ones, you beautiful people. And I was getting frustrated because I felt like it wasn't quite good enough. So, what I just gave you was what I've got so far. I'm going to continue studying on it. I'm not saying that the next episode will be about that. Probably not. But I really think we need to start trying to zoom out and look at things from the 30,000 foot view more often. And as always, the mantra, we are happy, healthy, wealthy, and free. And everything is now working in my favor. Loved ones, this is Matt Stevens, and this is the MySO prediction, and I will speak with you again directly.
There is a distance in the light.